Thank you. I'm going to be talking about several different ways in which we apply reclaimed water. And, of course, a lot of my work has been on groundwater recharge. We've also done a little bit of work on turf irrigation. So here we have three different methods where we got our samples from for this study. First off, we have these continuous infiltration ponds. These were actually so-called evaporation ponds that when they finally decided to go back and look at the water balances on these, they realized that they were pretty much just leaking. And as it turns out, the particular location of this site and the turf irrigation site is one of those in Arizona that's not highly regulated. So, but it was an interesting site to look at as a consequence of that. The next site, the turf irrigation site, is also receiving the same reclaimed water as the continuous infiltration pond. This is a place near Sierra Vista, Arizona. And the actual rates that were being applied are probably a bit higher than this. We're showing evaporation of 80 to 90%. The water reuse permits in Arizona require that when you apply reclaimed water for irrigation, you don't go higher than, or you stay at 80% or below, or higher. I mean, but they were definitely probably applying water at higher rates than that. And then finally, we have our classic way in which we apply water for recharge in Arizona, and that's a soil lock for treatment. In this case, the water is applied, but we operate with wet-dry cycles, because typically what happens when you try and put reclaimed water in a basin like this and allow the water to infiltrate is you get a lot of biological activity occurring, and that activity, either microbial growth on the soil-water interface and algal growth, will cause clogging. And so as that clogging layer develops, you have to dry out the basin. And this particular basin was operated, typically it would be wet in about 2 to 3 days, and then it would take another 3 to 4 days to drain, then it would dry for another week or 2 weeks. And then there are some other important differences between these sites in terms of the types of redox conditions you might expect. With the continuous infiltration pond, although the reclaimed water that was being applied was not of the best quality for many years, and so we'd expect that anoxic conditions would develop in that system because most of the oxygen would be exhausted, you'd have saturated conditions, and there would be no way for oxygen to get in. Of course, with the turf irrigation, the water's going to be evaporating, we should have aerobic conditions, and then in the soil aquifer treatment site, we're going to have cycling systems where we're going to have anoxic conditions, and during the drying cycle, you actually dry to the point that the whole surface desiccates. That's how you recover your infiltration rate, so that biomass that's developed on the surface desiccates and it's usually blown away by wind action. And so we have cyclic, anoxic, aerobic conditions. Maybe a little more history. The turf irrigation site is one of the oldest probably in the country, and they haven't actually gone out and done a survey, but it's been for over 50 years that they've been irrigating the turf. It's actually a golf course, and that's located near Sierra Vista, Arizona. And then the site also didn't have the greatest wastewater treatment plant. It was just a simple old-fashioned stone trickling filter until the 1990s. So for many years, the water that was actually being used was not of the best quality. Also, that water was being stored in ponds before it was sent out for irrigation. That trickling filter was upgraded. They put real artificial media in it and recycling and added filtration and disinfection in the 1990s. Soil aquifer treatment system began in operation in 1990. That's located in Mesa, Arizona. If you ever fly in there and you see all those recharge basins, the ponds, most of those are recharge basins. And that used advanced biological treatment, nitrification, denitrification, followed by filtration, but actually no disinfection before it was applied. Okay, the methodology that we used is we went out and we got soil cores. We sampled at the surface and a depth of 30 centimeters. It was actually difficult to get cores at the Mesa site because that was in a riverbed where they have lots of cobbles, so we did our best. And we also obtained control samples adjacent to the application sites and also at depths at the surface and at 30 centimeters. And then we went through a sequential extraction, kind of classic technique, used acids to get the carbonates, use oxidation to remove any oxidizable organic matter, and then chelation to remove the iron and manganese oxide, so we get an iron and manganese extract. And so we analyzed the remaining soil after each extraction step, and we also analyzed the extracts for major cations and anions. Okay, so these are some of the results that we had. This is for the soil aquifer treatment site, and these are the total masses of extracts. And on the left here, we have the two controls, and then we have our in-basin sample at the surface and our in-basin sample at a depth of 30 centimeters. And you can see here that there's a lot of accumulation at the surface, and that's to be expected because of all the biological activity there. And a lot of that's then associated with either the carbonate extract or the organic extract. And we go to the in-basin sample, and we see that nothing really appears to be accumulating there. Okay, there's again, on the in-basin sample, we have a couple things going on. We have all the biological activity, and certainly if you go ahead and extract that and look for other types of organic compounds of constituents, you know, the majority of what you're going to find there is biomass-related material, but you will find some very hydrophobic compounds of concern, such as hormones, the polybromate diethyl compounds that are used as flame retardants. However, some studies that have been done on these sites show that indeed they do adsorb at the surface and remain there as part of that fraction, but they're not penetrating down further. And if you do a mass balance, they do appear to be degrading except for the PBDs. And if we look at just the organic content associated with the extracts, and we find that almost all the organic content, as we would expect, associated with the in-basin sample is associated with that oxidizable fraction. And then there's also a little bit accumulating with the iron and manganese oxide fraction. And very important as far as the sustainability of the situation is that you could just go down 1 foot, even though we have this huge organic load on the system, there's no accumulation. Now, this data kind of surprised me, but then this is for the continuous infiltration basin. These are the total masses for the extracts. And we don't see much accumulation, just a little bit maybe of the organics. And this is surprising because I thought, well, you're going to have a lot of biological activity and things should be building up on the soil-water interface. And if it's a continuous pond like this, you'd expect that after all these years, there'd be a lot of material accumulating, but there appear to be some kind of scouring mechanisms. Periodically, they get floods that come through the area. This is actually the first pond of four ponds that are in sequence and series. Typically, only the first pond is used, but when they do get high flows due to rain, which occasionally does happen in Arizona, our joke is it all comes in one day, typically, they're probably getting a lot of scour action, and it's removing the materials that are building up there. Also, you know, the anaerobic conditions or anoxic conditions may be limiting the type of microbial activity. And if we go down 30 centimeters, we see a similar story. The control is not very different from the inside the pond. And again, there's just a little bit of accumulation, maybe of organic extract, but we're not seeing any long-term effects. And if we look at more detail on the organic content after each extraction, and most of the organic content, as you'd expect, is associated with the hydrogen peroxide extract, indicating that we are getting some accumulation of biomass there, and nothing else is changing. Here we see that at 30 centimeters, most of the organic content is actually associated with the iron and manganese content extract, and therefore we're getting some kind of a removal by adsorption. Might be going longer term, but it seems to be sustained. There is a decrease in the iron associated with this extract, but it's only about 30%, which is surprising after all these years. So, okay, the turf irrigation, and we're seeing here we have the total masses for the surface, and as you'd expect, there's some accumulation in the organic extract, but there's not really a great amount of increase as compared to the control. You look compared to the soil aquifer treatment system, so the drying that occurs is not causing a large amount of biological activity to occur. And surprisingly, I'm not sure if this is totally a representative sample, but it's one we had to work with, and the site wasn't easily accessible, but we don't see any measurable organics in the organic extract at a depth of 30 centimeters, and I expected to see something. And we do see somewhat of an increase here in the iron and manganese oxide, and of course they were adding some kind of iron supplements And so we're seeing a long-term effect there where that's actually helping maybe in the ability to absorb organics. And if we look at the organic content after each extraction, and most of the organics are associated with the H2O2 extractable material. And again, when we look at it for a depth of 30 centimeters, and there's some material there, but it's building up with the iron and manganese oxide extract. So, in summary, the organics accumulated at the surface but decreased at 30 centimeters in all cases and compared to the controls. The two infiltration systems did have some increase in iron and manganese oxide content of those extracts, so you'd expect that with the anoxic conditions. And there's some other interesting data, I don't think I'd have time to show, but the manganese is actually moving around between the iron and manganese oxide extract onto the carbonate in one of the systems. Turf irrigation had an increase in iron. The application of the iron in aerobic conditions probably caused that to occur. And that's the end of this talk.
Are there any questions for Peter?
Did you notice anywhere when you're doing this type of irrigation, anything where the soil became wetting, or what other people call fairy rings, or areas where the soil was just dawnings or in circular patterns? I know that some people found that where they irrigate golf courses and other places in their irrigation.
What is that, like crop rings? Or? I'm not sure what you're talking about.
This is what we believe. They call it fair rings. It's been there for since medieval times. I agree. But just like, did you notice anywhere where you're doing these types of things, especially where you have the organic accumulating in the surface layer, where this organic may be much more, say, non-native? Did you notice any non-wetting?
No, I mean, I've dealt with a lot of other people that are involved with turf irrigation on golf courses, and we haven't found that, at least in Arizona.
Okay.
It could be because of our, you know, the hot temperatures, and we actually get lower water content probably on the surfaces. We also have big problems with salinity in a lot of our reclaimed water that might help kill the fungus.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Unfortunately, they have to change most of the grasses as a consequence of the salinity. But
any other questions?
Yes.
Any idea about what fraction, what percentage of your organic load has actually reached below a 30 centimeter depth? Because you're just looking at the top 30 centimeters.
Yeah. At the Mesa site, that's very well characterized, and that fraction, there's only about, that's a very high, fairly highly treated water. There's only about 10 milligrams per liter of dissolved organic carbon that's actually applied. And over time, if you get a groundwater sample, because we actually have that plume delineated out over about 15 years now of the reclaimed water, because it's never actually been recovered, you find that it goes down to about 1 milligram per liter. And directly below the basin, it'll be about 1.5 or 2 milligrams per liter. So, and we've characterized that material, and it's very much like natural organic matter and some side microbial products is mostly what's there. So it's pretty refractory material that's left over. So basically, the easily biodegradable material is removed almost in that top foot.